Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Live from the ESPN FM 101.5 and 1480 AM studios, this is the Gregeth and Hooks Show. Call the show 402-466-3776. Your teams, your town, your show. Here are your hosts, Nick Gregeth and Bill Hooks.
Welcome back into Gregeth and Hooks on Lincoln Sports Authority, ESPN FM 101.5, 1480. Now, you guys know we talk a lot of MMA on the show. We've talked a lot of MMA over the years. One of the guys that I love to talk about is Nebraska's own Anthony Smith. And when I found out that Anthony was going to be in studio, and I've got to hang out with him for a little bit here today, so you can see I'm pretty darn excited because I love my MMA. Anthony Smith, Lionheart, sitting in studio with us. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm just happy to be here in Nebraska. I wish the weather was warmer, though.
Oh, I know. You believe it's going to be 60 on Saturday?
I mean, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, well, this is Nebraska. That means it'll be, whatever, negative 10 the next day, probably.
Right. It'll probably be blowing 35.
You think
the
so?
Window pipe, I don't know. You know this
Who
place.
Knows, right?
Maybe you'll get one of those, because sometimes our basketball team, because you got coming up at the PBA on the 25th of April, you know, you have a big fight going on. We always joke, because we'll go down to cover basketball games, and like the year that Miami came up here, it was maybe 4 degrees out. Those guys were ready to fly home the moment they got off the plane.
That's good. That's an advantage, right?
Right.
Big should be.
There we go.
It should be. All right. Well, I hope Glover Teixeira doesn't like cold weather.
Where's he from? Is he Brazil? Where's he from?
He's from Brazil, but he lives somewhere in Connecticut now. So okay. I think he's been in Connecticut for a long time. He's probably used to it.
He's probably all right with that. Yeah. So coming up, you got a big fight with Glover Teixeira. And the cool part about this is you know, you're a Nebraska City kid. You live in Omaha now. We all know Nebraska fans, they rally around their athletes. They love their athletes. You're about to fill up the PBA, you know, best facility in the state. How does that feel? How excited are you for that? And how does it feel compared to, like, you've been on some of the biggest stages in some of your fights recently?
Yeah, you know, I've been, this is my fifth straight main event. Mm-hmm. I fought for the title. I've headlined T-Mobile Arena. And I'm more excited for this event than I have for any fight I've ever had. After I fought John Jones for the title, the UFC asked me, you know, kind of what my bucket list was. And number one on the list was to headline an event in Nebraska. That's awesome. What I've always wanted. That was it. I made my pro debut here in Lincoln. And I, from that moment, was do as much as I can to fight my way to the top and get to a point where the UFC wants to bring me back as a main event in Nebraska. And it took longer than I expected, but here we are.
Hey, man.
So on the 25th, when you do this, will it mean more that you're going to be here?
Yeah.
Because I know, because I go back, Nick, and you and I saw Bud fight at PBA, which was absolutely crazy, insane.
Nuts.
He had a special entrance. He wore all this stuff. Is it going to mean more when you get there?
Yeah. This is the most important fight I've ever had. And I've never been this excited for a fight. Like, I think about it every single day, like what the walkout's going to be and the crowd and it's going to be bananas, you know, and just the love that I've already gotten already, is a little bit shocking, you know, and, you know, I've said this before, I wasn't sure if people paid attention because I'm so busy and I'm just focused on my goals and I got a lot going on. I got a young family. So when it was announced, that was when I first realized, like, oh man, like, people still care. And I think Terrence probably has a similar feeling, you know, he does a lot and he does fight in other places. Mm-hmm. And then when he comes home, it's mm-hmm. always different and it's more special when it's home.
It's cool, man. Cause, over the years, whether it was Houston Alexander coming out, you know, and he's got the Husker stuff on and everybody's screaming and yelling up in Omaha, Jake Ellenberger, when he fought here and he had his last fight here and, watching him put his gloves down and that was just, that was emotional. Cause Jake's a cool guy, you know, and you get to know him over the years. And, it just, I'm so excited to see that and to just, as a Nebraskan, to be able to be in the crowd and cheer for you and know that down there as you're walking in, that adrenaline rush will probably be unlike anything you've ever had.
Oh, I just hope I don't cry, if I'm being really honest. No,
he walks in, it's, tears up, and then KOs the guy.
I mean, those are emotional moments anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like you're like the guys that came before me, mm-hmm. I think at this point, I think people forget about some of those guys. You know, like Jake Ellenberger gave me a chance a long time ago and kind of took me under his wing and mm-hmm. brought me out to California and put me up in his house. And he was like my first introduction to like mainstream MMA, you know, Like, you know, he brought me into rooms with Babalu and Fabricio mm-hmm. Verdum and Michael Bisping and Mark Munoz and just people that I would have never met otherwise. Jake was the guy that kind of introduced me into those circles and I just took those relationships and built them. But so being able to be another guy in Nebraska, the headline event after guys like Houston, mm-hmm. And Jake, and there's guys that people don't talk about so much, like Jason Brills, mm-hmm. Ryan Jensen, you know, like Brian Jensen helped me for a long time. Jason Brills is the same way. I mean, there's so many guys from here that people don't talk about. They did come before me, you know, like people don't talk that much about Drew Dober anymore or mm-hmm. Mirsad Bektik, but both of those guys are still competing in the UFC, still doing well for the most part, mm-hmm. And still represent Nebraska to some degree.
Real quick, I want to ask, because there's another possible, I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, especially training out of Omaha, we have another possible UFC fighter in Bud Crawford. Talking yeah. about wanting to come fight. What do you think of that? Like, how do you, because I told you before we got on, his trainer, Jamie Belt's one of my best friends. And the instant thought that everybody has is, all right, boxer, MMA fighter, boxer goes in the ring. If you go in with a boxing stance, you're going to be in trouble because you can get taken down quick and that kind of stuff. It's a different deal. Jamie will point out quickly that he actually trains wrestling all the time.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about Bud Crawford possibly getting into MMA and doing a one-for-one, basically?
I don't think that he will, just because first of all, he's doing so well boxing. Mm-hmm. You know, me and a lot of other people think that Terrence Crawford is the pound for pound best boxer in the world right now. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple guys, you know, there's a couple people up there like Lomachenko and whatever. But I think that he would compete well with a lot of guys around his mm-hmm. weight because he does wrestle. I mean, there's a video floating around out there somewhere of him manhandling Gilbert Smith, who isn't 85er to begin with. Is a big guy compared to Terrence. And Terrence does well. You know, his kids are nationally ranked wrestlers. Mm-hmm. I mean, he knows a little bit about the ground game, and he's got a lot of friends that are MMA fighters that he does train with. So I think he would do well. I don't think Terrence has, you know, I've heard him do interviews and talk about MMA. I think that it's more of a pipe dream for him. I think he thinks it would be fun. But if he really put his mind to it, I think Terrence Crawford can do whatever he wants.
Do you think, too, I think this is the case. Boxing, this is what makes MMA so much greater than boxing, in my opinion, and I love boxing, is that in MMA, right, you got John Jones, one of the best 205ers of all time, and then you've got you, who at that moment was there, ready to fight, let's get in this thing, and let's have the best against the best. In boxing, it's sometimes impossible to make those matchups.
Right.
And I think that in that scenario, this is his way of saying, hey, guys, look, I'm willing to go do other stuff that might jeopardize, you know, being undefeated, that kind of thing. And boxing obviously has a big cachet when you're trying to make money off pay-per-views and stuff. And I think he's kind of giving a power move to him and say, hey, let's get me some fights over here because mm-hmm. I'm willing to do these other things that you guys might not be happy about.
Well, yeah, for sure. And there's been a lot of the fan bases weren't connected. That was my fault. Sorry.
Oh, you're good.
There we go. Like the fan bases before were two separate. What is going on?
It's probably the connection. I apologize.
No, you're good.
How's that?
That's perfect.
Just hold that in for the next time.
Yeah, you have to hold that in the whole time.
Look at me.
Yeah. I just keep losing my own voice.
No, you're good.
The fan bases were separate. Like boxing fans weren't MMA fans. MMA mm-hmm. fans weren't boxing fans. And I think a lot of it was Conor McGregor. He created a lot of the crossover stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, started with James Toney and Randy Couture. And then it really didn't happen until Conor did it with Floyd. And now you got boxers talking about coming over. So now the fan bases are kind of meshing more. So I honestly think it's a good way for Terrence to get a lot of fans from MMA mm-hmm. to look at boxing and create this thing where we can share fans. It doesn't have to be our own separate fan bases. And I think, credit to Conor again, I think some of the WWE guys, as far as their fan base, mm-hmm. is looking our direction again. Ronda Rousey absolutely helped with that. Mm-hmm. So I think in the last 3 to 5 years. I think we're not just we're not such a niche market anymore. We're kind of dipping into these other fan bases, mm-hmm. and I think Terrence realizes that, and I think it's a smart move to, even if he's not so serious sometimes, to dip into that a little sure. bit. It's a smart move.
Yep.
And so I love these stories. I'm and these guys know I'm big on like progressions of life. Tell me about your journey to get to where you are. What was the most important part of your journey? And then when did you decide that this was your path to success?
Man, it's been a long road for mm-hmm, sure.
Yeah.
I took my first fight when I was 17. And it was just an amateur fight. It was just something to do to keep me out of trouble. I dropped out of high school. And I wasn't necessarily making the best decisions. I was just a you know, when everyone else was in high school, I was partying. That was, yep. you know, that was
still
what I was
doing.
Yeah,
right? 42. Still yep. doing it.
And I this wasn't supposed to be a career. That was never the mm-hmm. plan. Mm-hmm. It was just, I liked it. And then I was training and it was keeping me out of trouble and it was occupying my time more or less. And as I started winning fights and it wasn't even like really focused on my record. I lost my first four amateur fights. But it wasn't even about the record. I didn't even really care. And then, you know, next thing I know, I'm like 10-4, 15-4, mm-hmm. you know, 18-4. Mm-hmm. And it was like, people were like, wow, this, you're kind of good. And I was like, I wasn't even thinking about it like that, you know? I only ended up losing one more fight as an amateur. And then, you know, they remember them talking about going pro and you can make money. And I was like, money? I never really thought about that.
That sounds all right.
Right. Okay, like, yeah, okay. I'll try that. So, then I, you know, I turned pro, September 20th, 2008. Right here in Lincoln, and again I was just like, this is kind of cool to get a paycheck for it. And then I realized I could probably make a living doing this for a little while, and mm-hmm. I didn't ever imagine at the time that I was gonna end up where I was, but I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna push this and see as far as I can go. And and you know, I was a fan of the Chuck Liddells, and Rampage was my favorite fighter, so mm-hmm. You know, then you see Rampage with his big gold belt, and you're like, I need one of those gold belts. Mm-hmm. And that's where it started, you know?
You never went the chain then coming out? You never
no.
went full
no,
chain?
No, I don't think
Rampage.
I could hold my head up with that chain. Rampage, is a, he's a lot stronger guy than I am, I'm sure. And that's kind of how it went. And I struggled a lot. You know, I had a lot of ups and downs. I took a lot of really tough fights early on that I wasn't ready for. But I still credit my where I'm at now to my wife and kids. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell people all the time, especially the young guys in the gym, you're never going to be successful and you're never going to get where you want to get until your personal life is together. And although I was training hard and I was focused and I was doing the things I was supposed to be doing, I didn't have the right mindset. I was still, you know, goofing around. I was still partying a little bit. And then I met my wife and then now she's got a baby on the way, you know, and like, we were both pretty young, or 22, 23, mm-hmm. And now I have to make this work, because mm-hmm. now I have other people depending on me. And that was kind of when the change happened. And it's just progressed, you know, and then, you know, now we have three daughters and that's my goal. Like, I want to be a world champion for sure, mm-hmm. but I want the things that come along with being a world champion more than the actual title at this point. And that's the motivation.
That's awesome. So you come back and you get into the UFC, and essentially what they did is they said, hey, guess what, Anthony, we're going to throw as many like legends of the sport at you as possible. You also, the nickname was, it's escaped, legend, was it Legend Killer? What was
yeah.
the nickname?
Yeah,
so you get this killer. Nickname, you know, thrown on, you're like, guys, I'm Lionheart. I don't, you know, like Legend Killer is cool, but I'm Lionheart over here. What was it like when you get back in the UFC and they're like, here comes Rashad Evans, here comes Shogun Hua, here comes all these guys, you know, Hector Lombard is a heck of a fighter. Like, what was that like when you started seeing that? You're like, all right, I will, you know, I'm going to get through this, take these guys down.
Well, I didn't like the Legend Killer thing right. at first. Like, it's kind of stuck now. That wasn't my goal, mm-hmm. wasn't to take out all my favorite fighters.
Right, right.
And I think a lot of it is I was taking the fights that no one else wanted.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that I fought Rashad, it was my first fight at 205, and he was coming off a little bit of a losing streak, but he wasn't getting smoked, you know? Like, he was losing close split decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really tough. So it was a really, really tough fight with not a lot to gain from it. But that's kind of my MO. I just take the fights that nobody wants. Like, I'm the garbage man. Like, everyone, they want these matchups, you know, at least that's how it was. Now, sure. now I'm getting the good fights. But at the time it was, you know, no one wants to fight Rashad. Like, oh, Anthony will do it.
Sure.
So I go in and I fight Rashad, and that was like the first, That was the first one where, like, when you're standing across from someone and you're like, I cannot believe I'm standing across the octagon from Rashad Evans. This is crazy.
That's a cool moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless you're in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're like, whoa. I mean, there's like 2 seconds where you're like, this is kind of cool. All right, here we go.
Right.
You
got to figure this out. You know, and then I took the Shogun fight on short notice because no one else wanted that fight. They they offered it to a lot of people first. But I, you know, I took it. I think it was 8 days, 9 days notice, something like that. Fly all the way over to Germany. Have to hear Shogun's music from Pride while I'm standing in there, terrified, you know, like, awesome. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. Oh.
And it's just gone, you know, it's gone on from there. It's, you know, I did have the Hector Lombard fight. I fought Alexander Gustafsson.
So Gustafsson, you beat Alexander Gustafsson. Mm-hmm. That was over in Germany, wasn't it?
In Sweden.
Sweden,
his hometown.
So you fight him. You beat this man who is, I mean, he's a legend as well, you know, and his fights with John Jones and different things he's done. And then you find out that he is hanging him up. What was that like for you?
It kind of took away from my moment a little bit, for sure. And I felt bad for him because I know what it feels like. Obviously, with the struggles I've had in my career early on, I know what he feels like. Like, you know you have it, and you, for whatever reason, you're just not putting it together. Mm-hmm. And I tried to explain this to him very quickly. Like, it sounds silly. Like, it's not you, it's me. Like, I'm like, no one is going to beat me, you know? Like, I told John Jones before and I told him after, no one's going to stop me from getting back to you. Like, I'll outlast John Jones if I have to. You know, like, he says he'll beat me 99 out of 100 times. We got 99 left.
Right.
Like, I'm still coming back.
Right.
And no one's going to stop me from getting back to John Jones. And, like, it's Alexander Gustafsson is still the third best fighter in the world, and he's always going to be, or at least for the foreseeable future. And I felt bad for him because I know where his mindset is. He's just frustrated, you know, but you know, that's not my concern. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I got my own family to feed.
For sure.
So leading up to your, to any fight that you have, describe what it's like to train, when it starts, all the stuff you have to do, because it's not just training. I heard you when you were talking, there's media stuff, there's fillers, there's all this stuff. Maybe some people who are listening today that don't know what really goes into what you do leading up to April 25th.
Well, so my training camps are a little bit different. I still live in Omaha, and I don't have any want to move. Like, I like living in Nebraska. I like where I live.
You got three kids, man. I get it.
Get it. Right.
Like, that's raising kids in this state is really good.
It is. Yeah. And I just don't want to move them around because of my career. And I mean, then what? I retire at some point in time, right? And then I'm going to move them back. And then they got to go to new schools twice. I don't want to do that. So for this training camp, I'm splitting my time between Kansas City and Denver. But I only do that Monday through Friday because I have to have time with my family. So on Monday, I'll go to Denver. I'll be there Monday through Friday. I'll fly home on the weekend. This Friday, I actually fly to Norfolk, Virginia, so I'm going to work the ESPN desk as an analyst.
Nice.
So my training camps look a little bit different because I still have my own radio show that I do every Tuesday. I still work for ESPN. But Monday through Friday, I'm in training camp. It's going to be, I'm either in Denver or Kansas City. And then I come home on the weekends, and those days are, you know, they all kind of look different, but it's 2 to 3 training sessions a day. 6 days a week. It's tough for sure.
So as we're getting up to this fight with Teixeira, how do you see this fight going down? As you've played it out through your head, how do you see this thing happening?
I don't know. It depends on what Glover shows up. He's kind of evolved a little bit in the last couple years of his career. I mean, people want to say that, like, why is Anthony fighting the number 9 guy? Well, the number 9 guy is on like a 4-5 winning streak.
Right.
I mean, he's very quietly got a winning streak going, and he's got it over the guys that are in the division that nobody wants to fight. Like, I don't want to fight Kuti Laba. Like, not that I wouldn't beat him, but that's not a fun fight to get into.
Right.
You know, like, he's just fighting the tough guys, the gritty guys, those 10 through 15 guys. Are all super, super tough, and they're hungry. And Glover's beating those guys, but he's doing it differently than he used to. Glover's typically the real in tight, close boxer that wants to throw bombs in the pocket. And as he's evolved, you know, he's shooting more takedowns and using his black belt jiu-jitsu more. So I'd imagine I'm going to have to just, you know, keep my hands tight, my chin down for the first the first few minutes, and make sure that once we settle in that I'm not catching anything big. But I'd imagine he's going to be more well-rounded than he typically has been. You know, I don't think it's any secret he probably doesn't want to stand on the outside and trade with me. and he probably knows it's safer to get the takedown and play that more grappling game. But he also knows that I'm okay with that as well. You know, we've competed in the same jiu-jitsu competitions before. So I'm actually really, really excited to bring Glover here. Like, we could have gotten one of those other idiots in the division that are going to talk bad about the state, and we're going to be in this big beef going back and forth, and it's just relaxing that, like, he's – the last time I seen Glover Teixeira, we were drinking beer together. So it's
– Nice, yeah, okay.
It's
nice.
Not like, yeah. like there's no animosity, you know? Like, we both know what we bring to the table. We both know that it's going to be a dogfight, and, and we're not going to give each other an inch, and it's going to be – you know, we're going to try to take each other's heads off. But there's no animosity there. You know, like, I'm sure that we will have a beer afterwards.
Sure.
And that's fine. And that's how I would rather do it, though.
Earlier, you mentioned Chuck Liddell, and we were over on 96 Kicks doing my other morning show, and we were talking about Chuck, and I mentioned how he owned, he was a part owner of the Fat Toad here in Lincoln, and we used to go in, and like, when he was here, you knew it, because it was a party, right? And I was telling you one of my favorite Chuck Liddell stories is he's in there, and he's got this lady up on his shoulder, and he just orders shots for everyone in the bar. He did it like four times, and it's just a giant party. And it's have you interacted a ton? I mean, I know the story because you just told it to me 10 minutes ago, but with Chuck Liddell, give us your favorite Chuck Liddell story.
Well, I think they just found the picture is what it sounds like
no.
over there.
Oh, baby.
You got to tweet it at us.
Yeah, so I'll have to tweet it out. But so, like, it's even I don't think I've ever had a conversation with Chuck Liddell ever.
Okay.
Maybe just in passing in a couple small social groups, but nothing serious. But obviously he's a superstar, so everybody knows who he is. I'm fighting in Vegas, and I don't remember what fight it was, but Chuck Liddell was in the casino. So when Chuck Liddell walks through a casino hotel or venue or whatever, it's pandemonium. People go crazy. And my wife's best friend and her are like, if Chuck Liddell comes through here, we're taking a picture with him. Well, you got to put yourself in my position. I'm trying to make my way up to like,
you're like, wait,
a spot where I'm important, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't need everyone seeing my wife and her best friend sprinting across the casino, leaving me behind while I'm cutting weight to go take a picture with Chuck Liddell. So, right. And it was all a big joke. It's not like I was saying, oh, sure, you can't take a picture. But I was like, don't you dare go take a picture with Chuck Liddell while I'm standing here.
With those husband eyes, right?
Because right, I don't need Chuck Liddell looking at me being like, hey, I'm here with your wife. You know, I don't need the jokes. So I go off, and I don't remember what I did, but I went off quickly to do something, maybe use the restroom or something like that. And I come back, and when I turn the corner, because my wife doesn't care what I say. She doesn't listen
to me. That's all of us, man.
Right.
We all
she doesn't listen.
Yes.
You guys
yes.
are mad. You know how it is. She doesn't listen to me.
She's listening. Yes. You're
Willie
right.
J, Willie J, you'll be there someday.
Yes.
You'll figure this out.
You can still do it now while you're dating. Yes.
So I turn the corner, and there she is with her best friend taking a picture with Chuck Liddell. And like right when I turn the corner, I see it, and I have those shocking husband eyes that you're talking about. Like, what is happening here? And
they snapped
the picture. So it looks like it's just a picture of Chuck Liddell, my wife, and her best friend. But if you zoom in the back of the picture, is me probably melting inside, right? So she ended up finding the picture.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait to see this.
Oh, man.
I can't wait to see this.
Going to pretend like that picture doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. Cropped out.
Right.
I have to tell you, the last UFC fighter we had in here, and it was the last big event that we had, was Justin Gaethje.
Oh, man. He's crazy.
Can I tell you?
I love that guy.
Justin's awesome. He cussed like 7 times live on air.
On air.
Only 7?
He just kept going, oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry.
And then he just kept into his conversation.
And he was crazy enough, we were going to tell him to stop.
No, he's crazy.
He's crazy.
We need to get him to fight Conor real bad.
Oh, he wants to bad,
I know.
Too.
I want to see it, man.
Justin Gaethje is one of my favorite people.
Oh, my gosh.
But you can't hang out with Justin Gaethje. You can't do that. He's dangerous.
The last thing he said to us, because he was fighting Vic, it was where he headlined against Vic, and he knocked him out. And they hated each other. Right? At least that's how he was telling us. The last thing he said to us, he's walking out, and I'm like, Justin, I can't. Number one, I can't do this with this guy sitting across from me. And number two, I can't really say this over the air. But he goes, hey, when you see Vic, tell him I said he's a B word. And he walks 10 feet, turns around, and he goes, I mean it, a B word. Tell him I said that.
And he left.
And he just kept walking.
Just walked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just wouldn't stop.
That's absolutely
awesome.
Justin Gaethje. Yeah, he's one of my favorite people. He loves to gamble. He's a big gambler. Yeah. He likes casinos and stuff.
Uh-oh, hooks.
Let's go.
Here you go.
Right. I'm telling you, he's crazy. You got to be careful for that guy, though.
Oh, that's fun.
He'll get you in trouble.
Oh, well, that's fun. Well, Anthony Smith, we appreciate you, man. Living in Omaha now. Nebraska City kid fighting in Nebraska crazy, coming right? up on awesome, the 25th.
Man, awesome.
So this will be my son's first UFC match. I have a 7-year-old. He wants to go. Yep. He's all excited. So
that's awesome. My oldest two kids will be there too. So awesome. But it will all not right. be their first event.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, probably not. Been outgrowing the things. Well, thank you so much for your time. I know we kept you for quite a while, but
you're good.
The people were fired up when they found out you were coming on the show.
I've already getting text messages, by the way.
That's awesome. Very nice. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Good luck to you.